This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
We might see another bailout.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Things are looking pretty grim this morning for the mortgage lenders Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The stock price of both companies is in a free fall. Those shares have lost half their value today. Wall Street seems convinced a government takeover of some sort is coming. Alisa Roth has more.
The U.S. mortgage market is worth $12 trillion. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac either own or guarantee half those mortgages. But the two companies have seen huge losses since the mortgage crisis started, and it's getting worse. Josh Rosner is with Graham Fisher.
Look, the companies obviously ultimately have losses that will require them to raise more capital.
He says if there's a way to raise that money through equity, the companies should do that. But he worries that with share prices falling, that could be tricky. There's long been an assumption the government would bail out Fannie and Freddie if the situation got really bad. So the question is, how would or how could the government step in?
There is no clear policy. Washington has dragged its feet on legislation and unfortunately still is not fully accepting the seriousness of the situation.
Rosner says a straight bailout is out of the question, but there are other options. The government's considering what those might be, but Rosner warns Fannie and Freddie may still be able to sort it out on their own. In New York, I'm Alisa Roth for Marketplace.
Fannie and Freddie aren't the only troublemakers this morning. GE's second quarter was pretty mediocre, and the price of oil is back to setting records. A new one today, $147 a barrel. So far, the Dow is down 118 points, a percent, to 11,110. The NASDAQ is down 25, the S&P 500 by 11. Some winners, some losers in Asia today. Shares in Europe are down almost 2%. I wish these mortgage lenders and bank CEOs and treasury secretaries would stop reassuring us. Every time they do, things only seem to get worse. And so it's with great trepidation that we await the second quarter numbers from the banks. Here's Bob Moon.
Financial stocks got a lift this week when J.P. Morgan chief Jamie Dimon spoke of better days to come, but the euphoria didn't last. Wall Street's bracing for a new round of bad news when banks report their latest profits starting next week. Seaport Securities stockbroker Ted Weisberg says investors have heard it all before. Hopeful talk followed by deeper losses.
People are skeptical, and they just are not accepting the verbiage. Talk is cheap. We need to see substance.
There was a hint of some actual improvement late yesterday. The Fed revealed investment banks didn't borrow from its emergency lending program over the past week, and commercial banks scaled back. But Weisberg says it'll take a lot more than one hopeful report.
I think what everybody would like to see is just some clarity. Where is the light at the end of the tunnel? And is the light at the end of the tunnel truly light, or is it a freight train coming at us?
He says investors fear the unknown, but they'll be able to focus on real results over the next few weeks.
Everybody's going to be taking a good hard look.
I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Friday, July 11th on Marketplace.org. Today's the last mailing of those tax rebate checks. Retailers have seen a slight bump from them, But now what? Nancy Marshall Genzer has more.
You better watch out. You better not cry.
In retail, it's never too early to think about Christmas. Santa won't like it, but retailers will be doing a lot of crying and pouting this year. The rebate checks will run out just as stores ramp up for the holidays. Gas prices will probably still be high and housing prices low. As a result, wary retailers are making suppliers agree to take back unsold merchandise. Gary Rosenberger is with EconoPlay.
Nobody wants to hold the hot potato because someone's going to lose.
The economy is expected to be weak into the first quarter of next year. Hugh Johnson of Johnson Illington Advisors says retailers can only hope for a quick economic rebound.
Those rebate checks go away. It's going to be very, very tough. But something unexpected could come along and improve the outlook dramatically.
Johnson says a drop in gas prices could send consumers back to retailers in time for the holidays. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
A Canadian company says it's planning to build a pipeline that can pump millions of tons of CO2. The idea behind this is to capture and store carbon dioxide emissions underground. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
The 150-mile pipeline through central Alberta would pump CO2 to old oil fields. Once there, the gas could be permanently injected into the ground as a way to squeeze out any remaining oil. It's a technique already in use, but Susan Cole, whose company Enhance Energy is building the pipeline, says this one's different.
Most of the projects that are in existence in the world today use naturally occurring CO2, whereas we're using an industrial source of CO2.
That source is primarily an oil sands processing plant. Cole says the pipeline could eventually pump 9 million tons of CO2 underground annually, the same as removing about 1.5 million cars from the road. But Greenpeace Canada's Mike Hudima says that's only part of the story.
What's going on in Alberta is a huge greenwash attempt.
Hudima says Canada's vast oil sands operation generates so much CO2 that it will soon eclipse the pipeline's projected savings by a factor of 10. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
It appears Bud and Stella might get married after all. We've heard this morning that Anheuser-Busch and InBev are in friendly negotiations about a merger. Jennifer Collins has more.
The InBev offer was looking like a hostile takeover, but then InBev put in a call.
What's that?
What's that?
And all of a sudden, this bid isn't looking so hostile anymore. Anheuser rejected the Belgian brewer's initial offer of $65 a share 2 weeks ago. But money talks. There are reports that InBev has raised the bid to $70 a share and that Anheuser's board could vote on it over this weekend. If the deal goes ahead, it would create the world's biggest brewer with better access to world markets, says analyst Jeremy Cunnington.
They need to get the combination right of having good, strong revenue streams from markets such as in Western Europe and the U.S., but also then they also need to see the volume growth within the still low margin markets of China and Russia and Ukraine and the such like.
But Americans may not be so happy if this bud goes to Europe. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
At this Summer Olympics, as far as swimming goes, it's all about the suit. These new bodysuits developed by Speedo and NASA have changed the sport for good. The U.S. swim coach says he won't be surprised if every world record is broken in Beijing because of what the swimmers are wearing now. This is a perfect topic for our Business of Sports commentator, Diana Nyad. She's been a world record holder in swimming, for swimming more than 100 miles once. Diana, how exactly do these new swimsuits work?
Well, you know, the simplest way to explain it is you would think that looking at these very lean bodies, I mean, they don't have much body fat percentage on them. But the truth is, it's just like when you watch a runner in slow motion, you see even a 2% body fat, you know, body mm-hmm. has some jiggling of the flesh. And yeah. The same thing happens in the water. So this suit is so darn tight and the seams have been made so that the water crosses across them with such little friction that now that seemingly body fat free body really is like a slim little torpedo.
So it's better than swimming naked.
Oh, yeah. You know, way, way better.
And you've put one of these things on. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, not exaggerating, it took me 25 minutes with two friends to get it on. It's just like if anybody out there has put on a tight, thick wetsuit in the middle of winter, a thick one, you know, just quarter inch by quarter inch. And when I got that thing on, I mean, I have never looked so lean in my life. I was like a pencil.
I don't know. You're pretty lean.
No, I was like a pencil. And I wore it in the water. And, of course, I'm not a, you know, world-class sprinter like these people, but I felt the incredible zero resistance.
Now, how much do these suits cost?
They run in the neighborhood of around $550. Now, these top swimmers, of course, all get them for free.
But what about swimmers from, say, a poorer country that might not be able to afford $550 suit?
Yes, you know, that's always the argument with any, you know, technological advance, isn't it? I mean, does every pole vaulter in the world get the advantage of the newest Teflon, boron? I honestly don't know what pole vaults are made out of, but they're not wood anymore. That's one thing we know. And I spoke with Stu Isaac, who's the CEO of Speedo, and he said, look, you know, even if a swimmer doesn't have a deal with us, if they're at the Olympic Games and they're going to be qualifying to get into the final heat, anybody who called me, they get a suit automatically.
And what do you think about the argument that this is essentially technological doping?
See, I can't get that. I mean, would we expect track runners to run in the same light little jersey and cotton shorts that Jesse Owens wore? I mean, of course, we're advancing all the time. Oh, we should swim in the pools of 1924? Or, you know, we should swim out in the, you know, in the bathtubs they used to swim in? Of course not. So I can't get any part of that argument.
All right, Diana Nyad, our Business of Sports commentator. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Scott.
In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.